All righty. Hey, everybody. How's it going? Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday. How are you, Shane?
I'm good. I'm good. Thanks, Dorothy. Doug, welcome. You're muted there.
Yeah, I see that.
Hey, Doug, welcome. Glad you could join us. Sorry about the inconvenience there, the confusion.
I've been busy anyway, so it's not the worst thing, but
okay, good.
I'm here now.
Good. Awesome. Davia, how are you?
I'm good. How are y'all?
Good. Are you feeling better? I feel like last week you were a little under the weather.
I think I'm just burning too many candles at both ends.
I get it. Okay. Well, so I think what we're going to do is I'm going to walk through the next section of our training, which is around how to have hard conversations. So we'll do a little bit of quick review of what we did last week, and then we're going to dive into hard conversations. And then Dorothy is with us. She got a chance to have a hard conversation, I think, this last week. And so we'll look forward to how that went and learning where we're at with that. So let me continue to admit others. All right, great. So let me share my screen and then we'll get started with some good plain fun. All right. So last week, you recall we talked about this, what we call the Johari's window. We're learning how to take things that we are less aware of about ourselves, and we're bringing them increasingly into self-awareness. That I'm highlighting because the exercise we're about to do is when you do hard conversations, the most important thing you can do is to become really aware of what's going on inside you. And I'm going to show you an exact method for how to do that. So one thing as a reminder, when it comes to conversations, one of the things that I know about organizations is that anytime there's a problem in a team or a system or an organization, you can always locate it in a conversation that is missing or a conversation that went wrong and you got to have again. And so that's why I spend quite a bit of time on conversations and how to have them. Huge percentage of my coaching when I'm doing private client work is quite literally just, I got to talk to this person. How do I do it? And then we help people navigate that. Then we talked about conversational styles. We were looking at the kind of these three movements, away, towards, and against. Sometimes this is a cheat sheet for what's about to come. So I'm just reminding you of these things that we have a tendency to move in one of these three ways. Doug, don't worry about this. We'll come around over your 12 weeks and you'll catch up to this near the end, but you'll just get a little preview here. Then we talked about the four quadrants, people who like to talk now versus people who like to talk later, people who like to talk straight versus people who like to talk around. And you had these four quadrants of the general, the archer, the diplomat, and the magician. And here again, this is a tendency. It's just good for us to become aware of our tendencies so that when we enter a hard conversation, we know which of these we're choosing and why. all right. So with that, let me jump into, we all have three brains. And I think I'll do full screen on this. There we go. And then I think I need to move people around. Good. All right. So when we did the Enneagram training, we talked a lot about how we all have three centers of intelligence or three brains, the thinking center, the feeling or heart center, and then the instinct or wanting center. All of these things are driving decision-making. All of these parts of us are apprehending information and knowledge about the world. The head, of course, is primarily processed through rationality. The heart has an electromagnetic field 5,000 times bigger than the brain, and it is constantly sensing information, has 30,000 neural dendrites in it. Those are brain cells in the heart. So this is a very real center of intelligence, not a metaphor. And then, of course, instinct or wanting really refers to the body, like all of the body. The body is comprised of trillions of incredibly brilliant and intelligent cells that are constantly working on your behalf, that are way more wise than you could ever be. You couldn't even direct the cells to do the things. So there's a tremendous amount of information that our body is giving us. And so understanding that these three things matter, and the way I translate them is, what am I thinking? What am I feeling? And what am I wanting? This would be the cheat sheet for how we go through how to have hard conversations. So when we're talking about the thinking center, one of the most important questions to ask before you have a hard conversation is this: what do I believe about this person or this situation? What is it that I believe? What beliefs do I have about this person? And so I'll give you some sample beliefs that often come when you are thinking about a person. And that is, maybe you think the person is really political and they're navigating through politics. Maybe you feel she's too passive. Maybe you feel he's a bully. Maybe you feel she's too black and white, or you could say micromanager or lazy or doesn't get enough done. So there's what we believe in a hard conversation is almost always negative. It starts from a negative place, which is why we have to have a hard conversation. So that underlying belief that you have about a person is almost always going to have some negative tinge to it. And it's good to name it and notice it. So what is it that I actually believe? Think this person is lazy. Okay, fine. No problem. Don't worry about whether it's true or not true. You just want to know, what is the underlying operation that is driving the decision in the conversation you want to have? That belief will also drive emotion, which we'll get to next. But for now, what I want you to start to experiment with, and by the way, it is always easier to do this training when you have a hard conversation in mind. So I want you to take a moment and just reflect, is there a conversation you know you need to have that you haven't with a person? And this, by the way, this could be in your personal life, could be in your business life. It doesn't matter where it is in your life. It applies the same across the board. Or can you think of a conversation you had not long ago that didn't go as well as you wanted it to? It kind of derailed and you felt like it just wasn't a great conversation. And so I want you to start workshopping everything I'm talking about here through that lens of a missing conversation or a conversation that went wrong. So in that specific context, what is it you believe about that person? So just take a minute. And if you can, just write it down. What is it you believe? If you're just take a moment, reflect. Maybe there's a conversation you know you need to have. Maybe there's a conversation that didn't go well. Could be with your kids, could be your spouse, could be your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your coworkers, your board, your employees. Doesn't matter. Just make a note. What is it that I believe about that person? And on some level, it's going to have a negative hue. So then what we do is we explore how these beliefs could also be what I call thought weeds, these little thoughts that we have that kind of get planted in the soil of our mind, and they tend to choke out the life. And so if we hammer this belief home long enough and hard enough, we will begin to kind of have a belief that limits us. And so one technique that I like to use is to explore this alternate belief, which is, what if every behavior is motivated by a positive intention? What if the thing you see that is irritating, inappropriate, problematic, troubling is actually being motivated by some real positive intention? So let me walk you through what that could look like and why this is resourceful, especially in a hard conversation. So doing this exercise first is really helpful, and we'll set up that conversation. So if someone is really political, the positive intention might be that they are highly strategic. They're relational. They might even be prudent. They are working to navigate complexity, and they're doing it with strategic thinking. And usually political navigation is withholding information and knowing when to deploy certain information. And so some people will say, well, that's really negative, but there's also a positive to it. What might be the positive intention of somebody who's passive? You feel like this person is too passive. What might be a positive intention?
They may be being passive because of the fact that they're not looking for that confrontation, the negativity that can come from that confrontation.
Yeah. So they're looking for harmony or peace. Good. What else?
may come across more like respect, meaning they respect waiting and being asked when to speak before they speak, something like that.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, respect. That's good. Okay, good. So oh my goodness, I have no idea what just happened there. That's hilarious. There's got to be some way to get this back. Welcome, Prezi. It's the only problem with Prezi. Sometimes it goes a little wry. all right. Yeah. So I said, reflective kind, like that might be thoughtful. Those are things that I would say could live in that category. What about, he's a bully. What's the positive intention of someone who you experience as a bully?
Strong convictions in what they believe and what they're trying to put forth.
Yeah, good. Strong convictions. I like that. What else?
Sometimes I think they like just to argue, or it feels like it.
Well, is that a positive intention?
Not in this case.
Yeah. So I want you to think, I want you to search for the ones that feel positive to you. What might be the positive intention of bullying?
They're very confident in their abilities.
Confident. Yeah, good. And Bridget indicated opinionated, so strong opinion. So that sometimes that's good. Oh my gosh, what is wrong with this thing? All right. Engaged, clear, passionate. These are all positive things. Now, this exercise is really important, and it'll become really clear in a moment why it's so helpful to name and know what you think the positive intentions might be for any hard conversation. When somebody's too black and white, maybe they're wanting clarity, looking for alignment, they care about accuracy, but they lack the ability to navigate with some nuance, right? But that's okay, because these things are positive. And you're going to use that awareness of the positive intention to find your way into conversations where there's going to be disagreement or heat. okay, so that's the thinking center. Now we're going to move to the feeling center, and we're going to walk you through this exercise here as well. There are two things that can drive your feeling state when it comes to a hard conversation. One is your beliefs about that person. So if you believe certain things, they will produce certain feelings. That's how that works. So when you tell the story, that will evoke feelings in you, and that will drive how a conversation goes. And that's why it's important to counterbalance the negative thing you perceive with a positive intention so that you can de-escalate some of the intensity of the emotion. It's not to say that your intense emotions aren't welcome or you're not allowed to have them. It's to say that they can sometimes unintentionally derail a conversation. And so you can bring lots of intensity, but you have to be in a non-reactive mode. If you're in a reactive mode, then the language you choose will create more problems than you intend. So a lot of what we're trying to do is de-escalate reactionary emotional states. So that's the first thing. The second thing that can drive emotions are what I call tripwires. Tripwires refer to any time one of our values gets stepped on. So if you want to know what your values are, just ask yourself, what really pisses me off? That'll get you quickly to the things that are most important to you. So when I look at tripwires, these, by the way, roughly map to the Enneagram. You don't have to worry about your Enneagram type, but they kind of give you like a little cheat sheet for how to start. So if you're looking at this, you might say, you know, which of these things, tripwires, do I notice that I get set off by? So, you know, an example for me is I notice that I really care a lot about efficiency. And I notice I really care about being understood. And so when I would be in a leadership context and I noticed that somebody was assigning motives to me that I didn't have, I would get really irritated, really frustrated. And I would kind of be a dog and a bone to make sure they understood me, right? That's what drove me. That was where the emotions were. But there are lots of people who could care less about that. You know, they're not thinking about being understood. Like, you understand me, not understand me. I don't really care. And other people, it's all about respect, or it's all about no drama. I want zero drama. Like, drama doesn't frighten me. I deal with drama all the time, so I'm not bothered by drama. But other people, it's like, oh, drama, get that out of my life. I want no part of it. So as you just sit back and reflect on that conversation that hopefully you have, what is it you believe and what is the positive intention? And then the second question is, what tripwires were set off when that thing happened or when that person did something they did? So who would like to share? And by the way, this is not an exhaustive list, right? This is just my way of saying, here's a whole cluster of different things to help you reflect and go, yeah, I think it's that, or I don't really see mine. Mine's not on there. That's fine. So what is it when you think about the last hard conversation you had that really set you off? Maybe it's a conversation that's missing that you know you need to have.
Truth.
Truth is a big one for you, huh?
Well, when I know that somebody's telling me something and I know that's not accurate, yeah, that really gets in my craw.
Yeah, good to know. Good noticing. Who else?
This is like a really amazing list because a lot of these things I'm like can trigger stuff. But I think the biggest one that comes to mind is when I dealt with letting go of key players in my team last year. And I was not prepared to have a conversation because I was not in this incubator at that time, having this thoughtful conversations. And what really like pissed me off was I was offering my team a promotion and more responsibilities. However, they were not aligned with my vision. And that really like pissed me off. And I'm like, who in this world, like, would not want a promotion and more responsibilities and like an up level from a contractor to like a full-time employee? Like, oh, that's a big upgrade in my mind. But they didn't want that. They just wanted to be a contractor minding their own business, working with a bunch of people and not having a boss that they have to report to. So, and that went like super wrong way, like argument style, not like arguments, but you know, I ended up like letting them go because I was like, we're not aligned. Like this has to end. And it was just really ugly. But knowing, you know, the tools that I have now, I can say a positive conversation that I ended up having, which was a really rough one, kind of follow up from the last week's call that Dorothy shared. I had that tough conversation with my team, my contractor, who has not been performing. And I realized because of their leadership style was very different from mine. And what I was looking for is not what they were looking for. So just having that tool, like literally just, it was like a complete, like, I don't even know how to explain this, but like different view of people, because I was like so pissed off going to the meeting. I was like, this is bullshit. Like, I need answers. Why is it that it's not happening? But I also had a tool that told me, like, I don't like to give real-time feedback because it's hard conversations. And I avoid that because I like to recognize people and always say how amazing you are versus like, Shane, we need to have a conversation. So, and I realized that and I did the test. So I just wanted to say thank you because this is something that completely changed the trajectory, because if I had the same conversation that I just had 2 days ago without the tools, it would have gone exactly the way that it went last year. And it was ugly. It was traumatizing and it was hard. So thank you, Shane.
I'm so glad to hear that, Christine. Thanks for
looking for, but I'm like, okay, this is my time to talk. But it just kind of comes full circle knowing like how powerful these tools are. I know you know that, but also we don't realize the power of it till we're in the shit show. And then we're like, oh shoot, like I wish I had this sooner, you know? So
totally. I love that you're really taking this on. Thanks for committing to it. It means a lot. Cause I know it can make a difference, but you got to show up for it and actually use it. So that's awesome. Good. So you're noticing sort of, again, these triggers and hot buttons and tripwires that, you know, a tripwire is that thing where it's a little tiny wire that you set it off and a boom, an explosion goes off. And what helps us is to trace where is the source of the explosion? What is it that makes me so aggravated, so angry, so frustrated, so frightened, whatever the emotion is, what's the source of it? One source is the story we tell. Whatever story you tell will drive the emotion. And the other is the thing you value. And very often, we will tell the story that reinforces our value. So if I'm just naturally always concerned about things happening fast and being understood, and I don't get understood, that's the story I'll tell. I'll just be telling the story. That person assigned a motive, doesn't care, isn't curious, wants to tell me how I am. Well, they don't know me. And well, that may or may not be at all what's going on. But I come through this world with this kind of little lens about what I think is happening. So, so that's the next piece. So the first piece is the story we tell and whatever emotions that produces. And then the second piece is the tripwires. What things do we value that get set off? This is the method you should use every time you're going to go have a hard conversation. I will show you how to do this at the end. I'm going to summarize it and make it much faster so that you can see that. So now we're going to go to the wanting piece. Now, this is a little more, there's a really simple way to do this. And then there's a really more advanced. So I'm going to give you the beginner version and then the more advanced version. And sometimes you need a coach to help you with the advanced version, but it's well worth the exercise. So again, I want you thinking about a conversation you had in your past that didn't go the way you wanted, or maybe a conversation you know you need to have. This is where we get at kind of the orientation. This is the setting your compass. When you set your compass, what you're really trying to get at is you want to answer, what do I want from this conversation? What is it that I'm after? What do I need? What is my interest in the conversation? Well, I might want the person to understand me. That maybe that's, if I look at my little tripwire, I'm like, I just want to be understood. I feel misunderstood. I feel like you're assigning a motive I don't have. Then you can ask the next question, which is, what's the deeper thing you want? So this gets a little bit more murky as we go. So if the first thing, I just want to be understood. But the deeper thing I want is I want them to stick around at the company long term because they're really valuable and I need them. And so now I'm like, I've got like a deeper thing that I want that isn't just you need to understand me, which is my initial reaction. It's actually, I have like a longer, deeper thing that I'm actually after. And then we go one level deeper, which is there anything else you want that could be at odds with your stated want? This is very advanced. This is where we get into what's called competing commitments. So, a competing commitment, this happens to all of us all the time. There are two things we want, we can't have both. So we're in competition with ourselves about two things that we care about. But it's really, really instructive if you can ever get to this place. And if someone's willing, so I'll try to give you an example. So let's say, using this example, I really want to be understood. That's the answer to the first question. The second question is, I want them to stick around a lot longer. Is there anything else I could want that I might want that could be at odds with my stated want? Well, it's possible that what I really want is I want a different person on my team. And so I really don't want them to stay that long, but I kind of do. But I'm at odds because I'm like, but I need them and I don't want to have turnover. But really, I think I could probably go out and get a much better team member than this. And so why would that be important? Why is it important for me to know this? Again, everything we're doing right now is moving from the things I don't see to the things I do see column. The more you can see about yourself, the more you can mine and excavate what motivations are truly there, the more you'll understand whether you're unconsciously working against yourself. So for example, if I have sort of a deeper thing that I want that I still don't like to look at, which is I think I could do a lot better in who I've hired, now I'm potentially working against myself without me knowing I'm working against myself. So I know this can feel complicated, so I don't want to make it overly complicated, but I do want you to just, for a moment, I'd love for somebody to take a crack at this live on this call and just see what comes up. So, you know, I don't know if, Dorothy, I feel like you were on the last time we did this, and we did this with you, if I recall. Is that true?
Yeah, we did. I think that's right.
And I don't know if you want to go again with your most recent conversation, but it might be interesting to see if there's anything there. There may not be. Do you want to try that or no? It's okay if you don't. I can hand it to somebody else too.
If there's someone else who wants to go, they absolutely can. Otherwise, I'm game.
Okay. Does anybody want to try take a crack at this?
All right, let's do it, Shane.
All right. What was the thing you wanted from the conversation, that Surface One, from just for everybody's context, those who don't remember, Dorothy has a media buyer who was just not performing at the level he needed to, wasn't getting deliverables in on time. And she had one conversation with him that was pretty direct, and that direct conversation appeared to demotivate him. He became more quiet, withdrawn. Dorothy felt like, I probably could have done that a little better. And
he basically
so,
took the whole week. He ended up taking the whole week off to recover from jet lag from, you know, his 3-week trip. So by the time we had the second conversation on Friday, it had been a month since he had managed any accounts.
Oh my gosh. Okay, good. So that's the conversation we prepared you to have. So talk to me, what do you want from this conversation?
If I'm being really honest, there were two things I wanted. And one was, you know, for him to either resign or to let him go. Like I wasn't really seeing a path forward, you know, to kind of fix the situation, to be honest. But then the second thing I wanted was to, I wanted to, like, I guess it's easier to say what I didn't want. I didn't want to, like, destroy his confidence, because, you know, one thing I felt really badly about is, like, you know, he isn't able to perform at the level that we need someone to perform at in this role, but that doesn't mean that he's not a good media buyer or that he can't be really successful at a different type of agency. And so I also wanted to try to, you know, build his confidence back up, because I do think that he's very capable in the right position.
Awesome. You just answered question three, which is, is there anything else you could want that's at odds with your stated want? Your stated want is this guy needs to go. But where you could be at odds is that you don't want to destroy his confidence. So that's a perfect example of, like, a very frequent answer to number three is, I need to correct this person, but I don't want them to leave. That's the opposite problem you're having, right? You want them to leave, but you don't want them to lose their confidence. And that's really normal. Like, as a manager and a leader, that's super normal to be either like, I want to tell them the truth and get them to behave better, but I don't want their morale to go down, or I don't want them to leave the company. That's often a statement number three. So in your case, it's reversed.
And the deeper thing I wanted for number two, I mean, I'm an Enneagram 2 through and through. And so, like, I want him to still like me. Like, I wanted to, and which just seems like such a crazy thing to want in a conversation like this, but, like, I wanted us to be able to, like, you know, I don't know.
It's almost like I want to be, I wonder if a deeper thing for you actually might've been, you want it to be respected on two levels, not just liked, but actually respected. Like, hey, I'm paying you to do a job. You're not doing a job. I think you owe me some respect. And I want you to appreciate that the honest conversation I'm having with you is the right one to have. Like, I'm not doing anything wrong by talking to you. And that's the kind of the liking part.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Great awareness. So why is this important? Yeah.
So sorry. I had to, like, say this. Dorothy, I feel like you're like speaking my language, girlfriend. I'm going to be devil's advocate. And this is where my life coaching intuition is coming through to have this conversation. So who says that it's our responsibility to make them feel good? Who says that it's my job to be feeling respected because it's fulfilling my own cup, right? So I'm thinking from the other angle, like we have a business relationship. I'm not your therapist to make you feel good at the end, right? We're having this tough conversations, but at the end is like, how much is too much to bring in our personal needs and feelings, our wants in this conversation? And when do you really cross the line? Like, because for me to like same situation, I was like, these people that I let go in my team, they're great, but they were not going where I'm going. Yes, they can thrive in a different incubator, but not with me. And I also wanted to live in like good terms because I want to be respected. I want to be, you know, I'm like, I hate conflict, right? But it didn't go that way. So I don't know if I'm asking the right question.
Let's do this.
Doesn't make sense. I'm trying to explain. Sorry.
Yeah. You're rightly trying to ask what's the right way to do it. Like yes. How, in my case, what's the right way? We will get to that in just a second. For now, all we're trying to get at is what's really there. Forget for a moment whether you should or shouldn't say it or reveal it or use it or not use it. The main thing is you first want to get everything from the I can't see it column into the I can see it column. Then you have a choice to make about whether to bring it from the my inner life to my public life, you know, in those four quadrants. So the public life is I'm now revealing to you this need of mine. And it's not always appropriate to reveal the need you have, but it's really important for you to know the need. Because once you know the need, then you can begin to pattern the conversation in a way that gets you most of what you want. So we'll get to that in just a minute. Bridget, why don't you, you said you're willing to go. I'd love to hear your thing.
Hello.
Hey, okay. Welcome.
Hi. So actually this morning had a tough conversation. So I'm building a team of dietitians and one of my dietitians is full-time and then the other two are contractors and they're paid when they see clients. Some friction that's been coming up is they're not getting as many clients as they thought. And hence they're not making as much as they'd like to make. So their expectations are not met. So what I wanted from the conversation is they wanted to have a conversation about it, or we wanted to have a conversation to make sure we're in alignment. What I wanted from the conversation is for them to feel supported and like we're doing everything that we can, but we also need their cooperation kind of, because they didn't, for example, one example is they didn't want to do Instagram lives because they weren't paid for them. The deeper thing that I wanted, was I think to feel valued as a company for to feel valued in the energy we're putting towards them. I don't know how to say that correctly. I'm still navigating
this. This is exactly what you're doing it live. You're doing it courageously. It's very messy at first. So
okay. I feel very messy.
You're doing great. No, you're doing great. This is exactly how it goes. And by the way, everybody on this call knows exactly what you're feeling. They're like, okay. Yes, I have this thing and this feeling and I want that, but I don't really know what I want. It's this or, and so that's why this exercise is so weird. Cause it's like, you're asking me these questions that I don't ever ask myself, but it's really powerful when you get the answer because it will guide how to have the hard conversation to get the outcome you most want. So I would say that one thing you would like is you'd like for people to be really excited to work with you.
Yes.
You'd like for people to just be like, I love working with Bridget's company. This is so amazing. What an incredible opportunity. I love working here. You want really high engagement. And therefore, that translates to disproportionate effort. Like, I'm willing to do that because I'm passionate. I'm excited about what's going on here and why we're a part of this business. That's what I hear you wanting.
Yes.
And I heard you say yes. Great. Okay. Yes. Awesome. So the first thing you want is just a behavior. Like, I want this behavior to happen. But the deeper thing you want is you don't want to feel like you got to like kick people to get the behavior. You want people to feel like, what a great idea. I'm all for it. I can't wait to do that. Awesome. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. This third question, the hardest. Is there anything else you want that could be at odds with your stated want?
Is there anything I personally want that's at odds with excitement?
And or them doing this behavior? Is it possible there's something else you want that could be at odds with that? And there isn't always, by the way. So when I ask this third question, it doesn't mean that you always have to have an answer, but very often it's revealing an unconscious thing going on that could be working against you. So, you know, I'm just making something up completely. You may be like, what I really want is for Instagram to go bankrupt because I'm so sick of social media, you know, or like I just hate social media. And what happens is when you become conscious of the fact that you hate social media and you don't want to get on and do lives either, now you know, oh, okay. Now I can feel like now I'm connecting to the thing that all of us hate.
Yeah.
Now, I'm making this up, right? So I'm not saying that's what you're feeling. But if that were true, that would inform potentially how you'd have those conversations. That would inform how you might approach it, which is you'd go, what would it be like for me to reveal to them that I hate it too? Mm-hmm. Instead of trying to get them excited about something that nobody's actually excited about, it feels false. Mm-hmm. What if we had honest conversations about what we're all really dealing with? How might that bring about that engagement? Now, again, I just made all that second half up, right? So I'm not saying that's true, but I just wanted to show people how that exercise can actually bring about change in an organization. So I'll let you answer it.
Yeah, well, I think I feel frustrated that's how I built my business is through social media, and it was very easy for me. And I feel frustrated that the other ways that I'm trying for them, masterclass, coaching them on their personal brand, them doing reels for us, isn't working. And I don't know if that fully answers that question, but I do feel frustrated that I'm like, this is the only way I know how to market. Maybe it's about that.
Great insight. Great awareness. So if you're noticing that, because this is true about social media in general, right? 3 years ago, you could build a business on social media in a way you can't now. Easy. In the same way that you could run ads 5 years ago or do Google AdWords 5 years ago that you can't do now. Most of those businesses have failed. Very few have figured out how to run those. And so, oh my gosh, the whole way you get customers is now different. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like, you know, the deeper thing you want is for Instagram to freaking work. And that it's not working, right? And that's at odds with what you want them to do, which is go do Instagram, even though now I know the gold mine has kind of been mined out and I have you with pickaxes, just picking at coal and rocks that there isn't really, we're not inches from the gold. It's like that gold went away. The mine's been mined out. Yeah. And now what I have to think about, what is my go-to-market? What is the new marketing technique that will work for me?
Yeah. So with answering these questions and bringing about this awareness, because I think this is honestly so enlightening, is like, I just come to the conversation with this awareness, or I'm actually revealing, hey, this is the deeper thing that I feel as well.
That is what you get to decide in a moment. So the first step in everything we do, the reason that I try not to get people to figure out the right way is because it will prevent your awareness. Mm. Because if you say like, well, I don't want to talk about that, so I'm not going to explore that. Like, well, there may be gold there if you explore it. And it's possible that it's gold because it changes the way you have the conversation that has nothing to do with you revealing it. Mm-hmm. But now you suddenly know, like, oh my gosh, I think I'm pushing people to do something that isn't real anymore. Maybe. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's a fact. I'm just saying that's a possibility. So that all we're trying to do right now is, can you become really aware?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's the first. Okay. You guys have done amazing.
Thank you.
Now we're going to go, you bet. So now I'm going to take it and put it into action. We'll actually show you how this kind of looks then in real time. So after I've shown you thinking, feeling, wanting, and those little techniques, the what is the story or the beliefs that I'm telling about them? What's the positive intention that might be there? What are those stories producing in terms of feelings in me? What are those feeling states? What are the triggers that are active in me that matter a lot to me? And then what do I want? So I've got three layers. I've got the first thing I want, the deeper thing I want, and the thing that could be at odds with the thing that I want. It's a whole lot of stuff, right? Which is useful, right? And not all three of those are going to be super fruitful every time. But what I want you to do is a little awareness elevator. And it's quite literally, you start with, what am I thinking about this person or this situation? Then you transpose it. You ask the same question about them. What might they be thinking? So now you're trying to take an alternate perspective and you are guessing. You have no idea what they might be thinking, but you're just imagining. What might they be thinking about? What might they be believing? And this is where you use the, if every negative behavior is motivated by a positive intention, what they're most likely thinking is positive. They're thinking of themselves as positive. Very rarely do we go, I'm up to no good. I'm being a nasty, divisive, lazy person. You know, most of the time, the story we tell about ourselves is, I'm trying to help. I'm the only one who cares about this business and nobody gets me or understands it. That's what they're thinking, right? So you're automatically going from my negative story I tell about them. I imagine a positive story that they're telling themselves. Then what am I feeling? Irritated, frustrated, overwhelmed, angry, frightened, anxious, sick to my stomach, whatever, right? Well, what might they be feeling? Nervous, overwhelmed, anxious, you know, afraid, angry, stepped on, betrayed, whatever, right? You're imagining what kind of feeling states might they have? And then one deeper, what is it I want? And then last, what do they want? What do you think they're after? You know, assume the best. What do you think they're really after? So that's how you put it all together to try to get as much of that stuff from the I'm not aware, I can't see, to the I can see. Does that make sense to everybody so far? Tracking? Okay, good. All right. let's see. I think we just lost Bridget. I was going to ask her if that was. And we also lost Christine, I think. Because now we're getting in. Practical stuff. Well, Bridget's back. Okay. I don't know what happened to Christine. Because now we're getting into the what do we do with it now? Okay. So that's the first thing is like, here's what we have. All right. So that's the awareness elevator. So I just summarized everything into like, here's what you do. It takes, you know, it took me 25 minutes to explain all this. You're only going to do this in 5 minutes. You don't have to spend a lot of time doing this. All you're after when you're trying to do a hard conversation, you're only trying to figure out the first 15 seconds. Because the first 15 seconds, the first 10 to 15 words, the first whatever, opening salvo, largely determines the outcome of how that conversation goes. So all we're after is how am I going to start it? And I can't know until I have awareness of what the heck is going on, what I think might be going on. Okay, so we'll give you a little path for how to start a conversation in a minute. A couple of things that should be obvious if they're not, please remember, don't ever use text or email or any kind of text-based medium to start a hard conversation. it happens all the time. Sometimes somebody will fire off an email. You'll just feel like, I got to be efficient. I got to correct them. I got to tell them to stop doing that. Worst thing you can do. Please don't do that. It's like trying to bake a cake without an oven. It's just that you don't have the requisite the ingredients to make the thing actually work. So notice that if you have a tendency or a desire to do that, this is in your personal or professional life, don't have hard conversations over text mediums. this is an email that actually came to me. I'll tell you a really quick story. It was pretty funny. I was early in my career and I started with I was in advertising and worked on launching Porsche's SUV to the North American market. And I got noticed by a company that was doing web usability design stuff. And they hired me. Very, very small company. They were a very pioneering early stage of like figuring out the internet in the early, like this would have been probably 2000. So right at the dot-com boom before it had busted. And this guy had figured out a bunch of stuff and he hired me and then he traveled to San Francisco. I was in Minneapolis. He traveled there to do some work. And I had a friend at a company called Cargill, which is a huge Fortune 50 company that does, you know, amazing stuff. And he was like, what are you up to? I've heard these things. I want to meet with you guys and learn how we can use your services. I send my boss an email in San Francisco. I said, hey, I had a conversation with my friend. He's a VP of marketing at Cargill. He wants to meet with us, wondering a good time for you that I can set up that call. He writes back to me and says this, Shane, please don't ever do that again. You have no right to do that. You are not a company spokesperson. You have no idea what to say. This could have cost us that client. More than this, it shows me how arrogant, rude, and tone deaf you are to others. We will discuss this when I get back in town, Kevin. So I was like, wow, that was a lot to take. I later learned, for those of you that are wondering why and how this could happen, this person had a very severe mental illness, this guy that I was working for. And within 6 months of this email, he vanished. No one ever saw him again. He had debtors. And unfortunately, I had taken another job within shortly after this email. I immediately went to look for other work. But he came and he sat down with me when he came back. And I had prepared for this. I knew we were going to have this conversation. And he sat down in a very kind of arrogant posture of like, I understand you probably didn't like that email, but it was necessary for me to put you on notice so that you really appreciate how you should behave here. And I said, okay, let me just offer you some things to help you manage me better. When you call me arrogant, rude, and tone deaf, these are character attacks. And as much as they might be accurate, I am not able to change that part of me because you have pointed out none of the behavior. So if you would like me to change this, you need to talk about my behavior and its impact on you or the organization. Speaking to me in these ways is unproductive, and I don't let anybody speak to me this way. And then he immediately burst into tears and apologized profusely, and it was a total mess. So anyway, it's one of my most fun stories to tell because it's such high drama. And he like apologized profusely and said, you're so right. I can't believe I did that. So big mess. The moral of the story, don't email somebody negative feedback. Okay. So I think we get the point. Anyway, so that's the other thing. When you're getting ready to give somebody feedback, this is the fundamental rule of all hard conversations. Focus on the words and actions, not the character or the motive. So if you say, I think this person is up to no good, I think they're lazy, I think they're that, I think they're arrogant, I think they're dismissive, I think they're fine. You can feel those things, you can see those things, but the very next question you have to ask is, what behavior or words reveal that feeling I have about them? Because once you point out the words or the behavior, and by the way, behavior can be tone of voice. Somebody's tone of voice is a form of behavior, right? So their tone might feel condescending or dismissive or whatever, but you're still focusing on something they have control over. Nobody has control over their character directly. Nobody has control over their motives. And even if you're right about claiming and naming their motives, it will not be productive. You will not win that conversation ever. So whatever the motive is, ignore it. I mean, you can name it, like you can feel it and think it and all you want, but you're wanting to then get into like, well, what makes me think they have that motive? What behavior are they exhibiting? You keep showing up late to every meeting that I have. Sometimes it makes me wonder if you respect my time. Well, there you go. Now I've given an intention, like your intention is you don't respect me. May or may not be true. It could be that their car breaks down every day or who knows what, right? But the behavior, that can't be disputed. And so all you're talking about is what is the behavior in the word and what is its effect on me? All right. Okay. So now we're going to go into planning the conversation. It should be pretty straightforward. This is just that example. Here's a little formula. When you did or said X, it had this effect on me or others. And you're looking for behavior and words, and then they're emotional or could be financial or whatever impact it is. The event and the impact, the event and the impact. That's what you want to get really good at. I'm going to skip that. And now we're going to get into plan the conversation. So where will you start a hard conversation? I think the best place to start is the compass setting. The compass setting is hey, I want to have a conversation with you about increasing morale. Hey, I want to have a conversation with you about getting you on a path to level up in the organization. Hey, I want to have a conversation with you about what is the thing you want? And it can just be the stated want. If you feel like the kind of the surface one, that's fine. Or you might have a deeper one that you want to use that instead. But you're just going to start there and go, this is what I know I want. I want Bridget, in Bridget's case, I want you guys, I want to have a conversation because my interest is for you all to be really successful. I want you to be growing and developing. And on top of that, I want you to love working with me. That's why we're having this conversation. So I almost always recommend you start a conversation with that positive compass setting. Okay. Oh, come on, Prezi. I'll get there soon and very soon. All right. Then what will you observe? Okay, so you've done all of this awareness elevator work. That is where you get to make choices about what information you're going to reveal and what information you're going to observe. And this is the art. So this is not something where we can say you should never do this or always do this. I do recommend a couple of things. It's not always necessary that you reveal everything about yourself and what you're thinking and feeling. Sometimes it can be quite potent and powerful if it's done from a place of strength. If it comes from a place of honesty. So for example, I might say, hey, you know what, Bridget, sometimes I have this weird tripwire kind of value that matters a lot to me. It's like, I love to be understood. And that's not your problem. That's my problem. But it really set me off. And I'm not saying you've got to fix that. I want you to know that's why I'm bringing a lot of emotion to this conversation. And it's probably not necessary or fair, but it's real. And I just want to name it so that if you feel an elevated sense for me, you know how to interpret what I'm saying. So now what I've given you is a wonderful, what's called a meta comment. So meta means about, right? A comment about a comment. I'm now commenting on the thing I'm about to say. And what it does is it's like putting in the clutch and changing the gears. It's preparing the way. It allows somebody to begin to go, okay, what frames am I supposed to be hearing Shane from? Because I am getting a whole lot of energy off of him, but I don't know why or what's happening. Well, wonderfully, Shane just told you why. Like, this isn't about you. I have a particular value that matters to me. And this is really important. When you reveal a tripwire, you don't make it their responsibility to fix. It's not their responsibility. If you value that, that's just something you value. Their job is not to meet every one of your little values. They have their own set of values. Your job is to manage that. So it's not your job, all of you on this call, to understand me to make Shane feel better because he has a need to be understood. It's not your job. It's my job to tolerate being misunderstood and keep trying. Does that make sense? So, and again, it's not to say that my value isn't important. It is important. It's just to say people were not put on earth to match my values and do what I like and think. Even people I pay weren't put on earth to do that. So hopefully that helps kind of think through an example of what you might reveal. So you might reveal feelings. You might say, hey, need to have this conversation. I notice that I feel really, I have like some anxiety about the conversation because I really want it to go well, but I feel like I'm not clear enough and I'm worried that it won't go well. And so if it's okay with you, maybe we could try a few attempts. You know, I'd like to be able to talk it out a little bit and I don't want to be held to the first thing I say. If it's okay with you, I'd like to explore a little bit. That's another way to talk about meta comments, right? Or you may choose not to reveal any of that. You might also choose to do an observe, which is, hey, I think if I were in your shoes, I imagine I'd be really frustrated that I'm having to do Facebook Lives and they don't seem to be generating results. I don't know what you might be feeling, but I imagine if you've taken a few weeks off and you've kind of been out of the loop and people came in and told you you haven't done a good job, I imagine you might be feeling misunderstood. So you might just reveal what you think. If I were in your shoes, that's a great phrase to memorize. If I were in your shoes, I might feel X. You're not telling them what they feel. You're just acknowledging that you're considering what they might be going through. Okay, so that's the What are you going to observe? Lots of choices to make there. Tons of different ways you can go. Comments or questions so far? Making sense, getting nodding heads, very good. Or glazed looks, either way is fine. Okay, what will you reveal? Oh, I think I've already said that. Weeds, feelings, tripwires. You know, like, are you going to reveal anything about yourself? So the awareness elevator is, what are you going to observe about them? What are you going to reveal about your own inner life, if anything? Hang on, I've got a chat here. I can't always see the chat too. Dorothy's example, yep. Yeah, if I were in your shoes, that's a good one. Okay, so then what's your feedback? So it's, what's my interest in the conversation? What do I, if I were in your shoes, what I might be thinking or feeling? What I'm bringing to the conversation, my own feelings, tripwires, anxieties, whatever story I've been telling myself. What's my feedback? Behaviors and words and their impact. So then you get to the actual part of the conversation. So one, two, and three are really that first 15 seconds. I mean, maybe it'll take longer than 15 seconds, right? I use that kind of playfully. But like, all I'm trying to say is that any hard conversation, starting is often the scariest part. Once you're in it, they're really dynamic. They're quite fluid. And as long as you're kind of awake and aware to what's happening, you can really capture almost any derail. Then the last thing is about a story that I tell that I skipped because I want to make sure there's time for coaching. But the main idea is, the best way to think about this is, let the best part of you speak to the best part in them. All of us have little dark, shadowy parts of ourselves. And the more you let the best part of you speak to the best part of them, the more you will evoke that part of them. So let the best part of you speak to the best part of them. Now, there's one other little, I think that's it. Yeah, so here's the sample plan. I want to have this conversation because what's my stated want? This is something that I love to insert. Are you up for that conversation? Actually asking permission, even when you don't have to. So you're the boss. And I'm not saying this is always because you're the boss, but if you're the boss and you ask permission, it's really powerful. Because if they say yes, they've heard themselves say yes, it actually opens them. That word energetically shifts them. So ask permission. Hey, I really want to have a conversation about making things work better and making sure that you're functioning at your best. Are you up for that conversation? Yes. Okay. Then you could, if you want, say, hey, I really think, and you could observe what you think the positive intention is. I really think that you care a lot about and are really expert at searching out clarity. Sometimes when you try to land a conversation before we've had a chance to process, it causes people to feel shut down. Right? Now I've given the negative impact. And then you could give the preferred behavior. It helps me a lot when you just allow the conversation to unfold a little longer. It would help a lot if you don't have to search for clarity right away. Right? So there's dozens and dozens of examples for how to have these conversations, but this is just a little sample plan that can often be helpful. Okay. Comments, question. Yes.
So, so this kind of happened. So on Friday morning, you know, my team member, he'd been, he basically called off all week, and Friday morning he was back online. And so I messaged him and was like, hey, you know, how are you feeling? Are you feeling better? And he said, you know, yes, feeling a lot better, you know, just need a lot of sleep. And so then I said, so glad to hear it. I'd really like to hear the, you know, thoughts that you alluded to on Wednesday about, you know, Monday's conversation. Could we have a call this afternoon and, you know, talk about that? And he didn't respond to me for about an hour and then finally sent back a message that basically said, you know, I don't really feel like my thoughts are fully formed yet. You know, basically was saying like, he didn't feel ready to have the call, but in my mind, I'm like, well, you know, it's like this happened Monday. It's now Friday. You haven't really worked in a month and, you know, we got to have the, like, we're, we're not going to like let this go until Monday. So I basically said, you know, I totally understand that, you know, if, you know, I would still really like to, you know, have that conversation today, you know, if possible. You know, I think we should talk about this before the weekend. And so, you know, set the call for kind of towards the end of the day to give them some time. But I'm curious, like, when you ask permission, what if they say no?
Yeah, I'd use your judgment. So I'll give you an example. I had a sales guy, for example, that was just not performing, and he had a ton of experience, but he just wasn't experienced in the area of sales that I was working in. And I had a conversation where I was starting to give him some feedback. I said, "Hey, I watched some of your sales calls and wanted to review some of it." "Oh, okay." And I said, "You know, I noticed this." And as I was talking, I noticed him just getting tighter and tighter and tighter and more defensive. And I was like, "Okay, hold on. Like, this isn't going well." And so I paused and I said, I realized I hadn't done any of the stuff I teach, right? So I went back. I was like, "Hey, my interest in this conversation is to make you make a lot of money. And I'd love to give you some of my input around what I'm seeing that could make you more effective. Are you open to that conversation?" And he said, "Honestly, right now, not at all. I am very defensive and I don't want to hear any feedback from you." And I said, "No problem." So we hung up the phone and that was it. And I let him cool down for a day and a half. And then I followed up and he didn't want to talk. And I said, "It's okay. If you don't want to talk, I'm going to talk." And so we got on the call and he was prepared. And I said, "I'm going to have this conversation now. You don't have to respond, but I'm going to start observing some things. My goal in observing these things is for you to be highly supported. Regardless of how you think I might be coming at you, that is my true intention." And sure enough, we were able to have a really good conversation. So yes, there are times when you can say, "It's okay if your thoughts aren't fully formed, mine are, and we need to have the conversation."
Okay.
That way there's no pressure. Like, you don't have to speak, but I'm going to speak. There are some things that are important. "Hey, I kind of messed up in the way that I came at you. There are some other things that I don't think I've been totally forthright about what's really going on. And I think I owe you that. And here's what that means. And here are some of the implications." And I imagine that might be difficult to hear, but it's also really important because we're running a business. Yeah. So framing that for him so that he understands, like, "Well, you know, I'll get around to it when I feel like it." Not a valid output.
Yeah. Okay.
So have you not, you didn't get a chance to have the conversation is what you're saying?
Oh, we did. Yeah. He ultimately submitted his resignation. That decision together.
Do you want to share more about that experience for those of us to learn what it was like, or is it not something you want?
It was brutal, honestly. It was really hard. I mean, so, you know, there were several hours, you know, we kind of had the call towards the end of the day. And so he had some time. And so he came to the call with, you know, kind of written notes prepared, that he, you know, basically read to me. And the whole thing just made me really sad. You know, I would say the general kind of tenor of what he said was, you know, that he is really disappointed in himself, you know, in the ways that he kind of dropped the ball while he was on this trip. And that, you know, that based on kind of our conversation on Monday, he feels like, you know, 'cause he had asked me on the call on Monday, he's like, "Am I getting fired?" And I said, "No, you know, I'm having this conversation 'cause I want to support you and help you kind of develop to close these gaps." And so he basically said, he felt like, you know, the answer to that was, you know, yes. And that he, you know, basically that he wants to be here, but that he doesn't want to be an anchor on the team, or, you know, anything like that. And that he was, you know, willing to step aside if that was, you know, what was best for the company. And, you know, then we talked kind of a lot more after that. And then ultimately did go that direction.
So did you, is that the outcome you wanted or no?
It is the outcome I felt is best for the company. Yes.
Good. Okay.
But it felt horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, first of all, I think we can all join you in that horrible feeling. Okay. Anybody who's ever had to have somebody leave a team, it's no fun. So you feeling not great is tragically normal and okay. And you're not alone. So we're all here with you. We feel it. So I just want to name that first. As you're thinking about why that feels bad, what is it that feels bad for you? What specifically is difficult?
That I feel like I feel like ultimately it's my fault because, you know, I feel like I failed in the hiring process and that it was my responsibility to, you know, bring in someone who was, you know, qualified to do what we needed them to do. And I feel like if I had done a better job on the front end that, you know, I wouldn't have hired him in the first place. And so I hated that, like, cause he's such a good person and he is like, he can be successful at many, many agencies. You know, we are just kind of not your typical agency. And so I feel bad because I feel like the gaps are like not necessarily his fault. Yeah, I just, you know, I feel terrible because I don't want this experience to like be a massive blow to his confidence. I don't want to hurt people. And I feel like this was hurtful.
Okay. Well, so appreciate your vulnerability also in sharing openly and honestly what's going on here. I have some thoughts and I want to share them, but I want to give others a chance to just make any comments you want to make by virtue of support.
I love you, Dorothy.
I want to say the same thing. I had the very same issue this week and part of last week with an employee that I hired and worked with and had my team work with. And she just was not performing as the way she interviewed with me. And it really hurts your self-esteem. I run a medical billing virtual assistant, virtual front office company, and I was hiring somebody to answer the phones and do intakes and schedule and check benefits. It's a very busy position. It's she came out of school highly recommended, but I find, and we're not the norm, like you're not the norm. Would she do great in a doctor's office where she didn't have to switch gears as fast? Probably. She would be amazing. She has one of those voices that are like, oh, you know, and has the knowledge behind it. She could not switch gears. And you don't know that until you actually get them in that seat. And I learned an analogy. They may be great on the bus, but if you can't get them in the right seat, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Or sometimes they're not great on the bus.
You know, and you want to keep them because they're a great person, but if they're, there's been three or four, a handful of people I've hired that I just loved them as people. They were just great people. And it was one of the hardest people to let go. But most of the time, those people terminated themselves. They came to the realization they weren't right fit for the company. So I take it as a 50-50. Maybe we didn't have the right onboarding or the right decision-making in hiring them. But they also maybe overpromised themselves that they could do the job when they really couldn't. Yeah. Or they wanted to try. They wanted to see if they could do it. And in our atmosphere now, we don't have the time and maybe not even the bandwidth to bring on somebody. So if he would have came to you in a different way, would you spend more time training him and trying to get him up to speed? Or was this just a really good resolution that you knew needed to happen, but you just didn't want to happen?
No, when we had the conversation on Monday, like my hope was that he was going to like take this as like, okay, great. Like, let's buckle down and let's like, you know, because I was prepared to, you know, to devote a ton of resources, primarily my business partner's time, to mentoring and developing him. And, you know, instead of him kind of taking that conversation on Monday and like, you know, kind of coming out of like, okay, let's go. Like, instead he went the complete opposite direction and basically, you know, took the whole week off. And, you know, was
this is the other thing I can say to you is that when they come to their own realization like that, there's nothing we can do. And it's almost like that takes a huge burden off of you because they didn't want to go on that journey with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, so I told him, like, cause again, I do believe that he can be very successful somewhere else. So the way we ended the call was, you know, I told him, okay, like I'm going to write you a letter of recommendation. I'm happy to do, you know, any reference calls that you can send my way. Like I really, you know, he put in 2 weeks notice, was like, you know, I don't need you to do any work, like just focus on, you know, finding your next opportunity. And like, I want to support that however I can. And, you know, it was, so I sent him the letter of recommendation, on Monday. And he replied to it and, you know, basically said like, you know, thank you. You know, hopefully I'll, you know, be able to use this. I appreciate you, you know, you writing this. And then he, you know, said some stuff about how, you know, how much he appreciated his time here and, you know, everything that the team did for him. But then he ended the email, like, so it was all really nice. And then he ended the email by saying, you know, by the way, I want to let you know, that I am planning to either delete or revise my Glassdoor review to be more reflective of my time here. I hope you understand. And because he'd written like a just glowing Glassdoor review for us, like several months ago. And I was just, I didn't know, like, I like felt so, I was like, I don't know what to, like, what do I say to that? Like, I don't know.
Nothing.
What, being reflective of your time here, and like what that means, like, or, and so it was just like very weird. Cause like the whole thing was, yeah. So I don't know.
I truly believe when people look at these reviews, the ones that I wonder about when they go back and they argue online, I'm like, what are they hiding? When the company argues it online, when a company says nothing, I respect that company more because I know they're holding their tongue when they probably could unleash a full lots of secrets.
Yeah.
In the medical field, I don't know, in the medical field and stuff, we have to be very careful how we respond to those because we can't mention names. We can't mention if they're a patient of the practice. There's so many rules around it that I've also know that most people get on, they don't do, there's more negative views out there because people like to complain than actually people like to give positives. So I as a person, I take that into account. So I really wouldn't. If you're a great company to work for, people are going to come to you regardless of what the review is. It's, yeah. I don't think it's going to hold you back to.
So Dorothy, just a couple of things. One is just because he's hurt doesn't mean you hurt him. So that's an important distinction for you to make. He'll be hurt because that's a choice he's making to be hurt. You haven't done anything in my understanding based on everything you told me that I would say you did it wrong. I wouldn't even say you hired wrong. I would say hiring is a high risk endeavor. So you undertook something that has a high percentage of failing because it's really hard to know who humans really are because you're talking about invisibilities. It's not like you're hiring a basketball player where you know what his exact 40 is and how tall he is and how he plays. And you can't do that. You're not scouting for that. All of you are hiring invisible traits. Invisible traits are really, really difficult to get right. Even expert recruiters who you worked with don't always get it right. And that's their whole business is how to do it. So if you didn't get it right, it's okay. It really is. Like, welcome to owning your own business. It's just, you kind of have to allow for a percentage of hires just aren't going to work. And that's okay. So I agree with everyone here saying, lighten up on yourself. You might be a little hard on yourself. It's possible. I'd add one other thing, which is, I know you don't want to hurt people. That belief, that commitment is sometimes the thing that will create more pain for people without you knowing it. And here's why. Because while I don't think it's true in this case, you did not hurt him. That did not happen. He might be hurt. So that's the fact. But there are going to be other instances where you don't get the choice to hurt or not hurt people. That isn't going to be a choice. Sometimes you're going to hurt people. Your choice is whether you hurt them with your truth or hurt them with lies. That is our choice. And when we have a high need to be liked, we are more likely to hurt people with half-truths and lies, and people end up feeling more betrayed than they feel truly respected. And so as you become a leader and you operate as a leader, and as your business scales and grows, which it will, you've got to get really good at saying to yourself, my commitment is the truth. And I'd much rather hurt them with my truth than eventually hurt them with my lies, because that will create negative Glassdoor reviews. At least if you're forthright, direct, and clear, and they know that, you're going to have, at least they're going to say, well, I knew where I stood. They told me the truth. I never got lied to. I didn't like anything. I certainly was hurt by it. I didn't appreciate that. So that's kind of the invitation for you, is to keep practicing. What does it mean for me to kind of stop trying to figure out how do I not hurt, but rather how do I keep truthful in ways that are respectful? How do I stay truthful in ways that are respectful? I may hurt people doing that. That's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay.
That's very perceptive and I think very accurate. And I think there is an element of that I did that here. So I appreciate you saying that. I think that's definitely a trap that I'm vulnerable to.
Yeah, I am too. That's how I know it. I had to learn it the hard way.
Everybody out there is learning how to manage people better all the time, and feeling this way about somebody that left only helps you reflect further inside and become better at doing it anyway.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it does get easier.
Be more worried about you.
Yep, it does get better. You will get better at it. I mean, it's good that you have heart and you care, but I don't want it to inhibit your functioning.
Yeah.
Harvest the learnings and then keep going. You're doing great, Dorothy. Keep at it. Good. Okay. We've got some time here for just open-ended coaching. Anything you guys want to talk about at all? Anything that's pressing, urgent? Davey, I think this is your last call technically, but I want to talk to you one-to-one after this at some point, and then we can kind of go from there.
I thoroughly enjoy these guys, and we started back in December. Some stuff that Shane suggested, I took to heart and ran with it. And it has made my company, it's completely a 360. The atmosphere, the people I'm talking to, they're coming to me saying stuff that I used to do that it's just, if y'all will, just take what he says and just try it. Just try it with both feet in. You can't do it halfway. Try it with both feet in and see what happens. Set back and see what happens. Jessica, who y'all don't see in here, is actually my VP of operations, and she has seen a huge change. The strategy meetings, you have to have those.
Definitely.
You have to. And you may not even have to be a part of it, but you need to have someone in there that can report back to you to have those strategy meetings. It's, Shane, you have no idea. I wish you could be a fly on our wall at our company, seriously.
I would love to see it. Yeah, that'd be cool. That'd be amazing.
My problem is having the difficult conversations without offending 7 different Enneagram numbers. Because I'm the only 3 in the company. I have no idea.
This is important. So, what I just showed you transcends Enneagram number. Those steps in how to have a hard conversation will work for any Enneagram type, because there's a fundamentally human thing that's going on in the way that I designed that. And that is why it works. And I mean, it's not like it's perfect every time.
But we had a meeting today, and I told people that when I'm one-on-one with you, I'm trying to speak to you the way you like to be spoken to and how you like to decipher the information. I said, but when I'm speaking in front of all of you, it's virtually impossible for me to do to each Enneagram number or disc profile or personality. So when I come to you, I'm coming to you as my leadership style, my communication style, and I need you as an employee to understand where I'm coming from so as to not be offended. And that's the way I started the meeting. And then I broke it down, but it's just getting people to understand that we're all different, but yet we're all the same. And I would have never had that conversation 6 months ago. Never would have. We took 4 weeks with personalities. 4 weeks. So anyway, what I was going to ask before we get caught, you mentioned something last week about when people were not hearing instructions, and you said a phrase that would have made the employees stop and say, well, maybe I'm not listening. Or you said something that I've tried to replicate and I can't remember what you said.
I'm not being clear. Let me try again.
Okay.
Instead of you're not listening.
I cannot remember that. So,
you know what? It's, if you go to the module 3, there's a little video on called Switches, and there's a little PDF download with 10 of the most common phrases that you want to say and what to say instead. And it's on that PDF.
That's what I was trying to look for. I needed that last week.
And the reason it works is because you're saying, I, not you. So you immediately de-escalate defenses because you say, I'm not being clear. And what I've just done is I've signaled for you, you didn't understand something. Let me try again is permission asking. And what you've done is you've invited them to lean in and open their ears because they're going, huh, well, maybe he's not being clear, or maybe he's being clear and I just wasn't listening.
One thing I'm trying to stop is I'll say something and I'll say, does that sound, what did I say? Does that make sense? And then I get the head shakes and then I get them going off and doing something completely different. So I need to break myself of saying that.
Of saying what?
Does that make sense? I'll say, I'll give an instruction or say something and I'll say, does that make sense? And they'll look at me and go, and then half of them.
Yeah, right. So I think we did talk about that with you guys, that one of the things you can do is if you're noticing that you've given instructions and they've said that they understand them, to have them write them down and send them back to you, their understanding.
Yeah, we're definitely do that sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes that can be helpful. I know you've done that before. Awesome. Who else has anything? Mindy, I know you had a hard conversation or a kind of a thing you had to go do with one of your direct reports. How did that go? Did it go?
It did go, and it went okay. I'm trying to pinpoint kind of what exactly. It turned into a conversation about a lot of different things, which was good, but I do feel like my ultimate message kind of got diluted and I kind of backed off of it. So
that sounds a lot like every nine I've ever met.
Yeah. So yeah,
with love and appreciation. So here's my suggestion to you. The mm-hmm. next time you're either in a meeting or you have to have a conversation with somebody, mm-hmm. you know it's very easy for a strong personality to get you off message.
Yeah.
Right? You know mm-hmm. this about yourself. So one of the biggest things you can do for yourself is to write down on a piece of paper the message you most want to get across before you have the conversation. You bring that message into the meeting or into the room, or let's say it's happening during the conversation. And you have a thought and you're like, okay, that seems like something I really should say. Write it down on a piece of paper. Commit it to a piece of paper so that you can see it. And then commit to saying it. And commit okay. to holding to it.
Yeah.
So that you can say, all that's good. Those are really interesting. I appreciate all your points. I'm going to bring us back to the one point, the one reason that I want to have the conversation.
Yeah.
It's actually this. Mm-hmm. So that helps nines when you commit it to the outside of yourself and you turn it into black and white. It actually can help you stay with it, because what happens with the nine is you merge emotionally.
Yeah.
Nines have what they do, what's called merging. So mm-hmm. if I walk in and I'm like this, you're like this, you're going to be like, okay, fine, we'll go like that. Sounds good. And if I come in and I'm like this, you're going to be like, yeah, we'll just do that. That sounds good. I'm just going to merge and mirror whatever energy is coming at me. And it makes you incredibly affable and likable and people love being around you and you're magical. But it does mean that you've got to be able to hold that energy no matter what they're bringing at you.
Yeah.
So does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Questions about it?
No questions, I think. But I think that's an excellent tip. And I think writing it down is key.
Give it a try. If mm-hmm. it's, if you're noticing for sure.
Okay.
Okay. So does that mean you have to have that conversation again with that person, or do you feel like that's resolved?
I think, well, I was thinking about it as I left and I was like, I got the message in there, but I just think it got overshadowed by so many other things we were talking about. So I think, you know, going forward, I think if I see these behaviors and words happening again, I need to give her immediate feedback and say, hey, just call her up after, you know, because it mostly happens on group calls, right? So immediately after, I just need to say, hey, this is what I was talking about when you said this and that, it's having this effect.
So I was coaching a CEO of a multi $100 million real estate company who was a nine. And he had hired a senior VP who was also a nine. And that nine was not performing. And so I sat down with the CEO, and he had been steeped in the Enneagram for a couple of years working with me. He knew the whole system. And I said, okay, when you go have this conversation, we're going to map out the conversation. You need to commit to saying these things in this way with this kind of clarity. And he's like, oh, it's so stressful, but okay, I'm going to try and do the best I can. Went and had the conversation. I met with him after. How'd it go? He's like, whoo, wow, that was intense. Like, I gave it to him. And I gave it straight, and it was like the hardest thing I've done. But I absolutely went at him with everything. I was like, wow, that's great. That's awesome. So I followed up with the senior VP. I'm like, hey, how'd the conversation with Greg go? And he's like, yeah, it went great. I was like, what was your takeaway? He's like, you know, mostly we're just kind of getting aligned on like the industry, and he seemed to feel I was doing good. And so I feel good about that. Why are you asking? So I went back to the CEO. I was like, you know, this is the impact you have. He's like, now that you say it, yeah, I probably was more gentle than I realized. And I definitely spent time talking about that. And then he wanted to talk about that. So we spent a lot of time on that. And so It's basically like you dilute it. The nines have this mastery of like, here's the pill. I'm going to put in a whole lot of ice cream and then a pillow around it. And then we're going to put that in a big giant bubble. And now you're going to take that pill. Yeah. So that's the tendency. I say it with great compassion and love. But the invitation is to really get that succinct message. Good. Okay. I think I've picked on Mindy enough. anybody else want to, now that I've, you know, really demonstrated how I coach so cruelly, but anybody else want to share anything, questions, anything going on?
I'm just taking it all in. I think it's just so good. What you're teaching.
Oh, I appreciate that, Renee.
And, I have lots of hard conversations a lot. And I'm like, some that are really condescending. There's one person that I have to report to that's very condescending. And so I never know what mood they're going to be in. So when I have this meeting, I'm like, if he's in a good mood, it's going to go very well. If he's having a rough, whatever's going on in his personal life, business-wise, whatever, it's going to be hard and it's going to be brutal, you know? And so yeah. I just never know which direction it's going to go when I'm having those conversations. So it makes it tough. And I'm always expanding and trying to grow. So I think trying to let people know ahead of time what you're thinking, like you've taught us like 3 or 4 months ahead of time before you have that conversation helps, you know?
This is someone who has power over you?
Yeah. Kind okay. of. I rent space in the church, and he's always okay. trying to expand. I'm trying to expand, so trying to get our visions to line up.
Got it.
You know.
So I think the best thing for you to do is to watch the bonus module on how to manage up and across.
Okay.
So it takes all of the training we just did around hard conversations, but it's clarifies that around how you do that when power dynamics are at play. Okay. So when you're managing down through power, your whisper is a shout. Everything you say gets amplified. When you try to speak up or across through power, the message always gets forked into two parts. Either one is I'm listening, I want to hear what you have to say, and the other is I'm suspicious. I don't know what your actual motive is. Right. And so this training shows you how to bypass that filter so you're actually heard in ways that you want to be heard.
Okay, which module is that one?
It's bonus 5.
Bonus 5. Okay.
Yep. So it's not a module. It's a bonus. Okay. It's listed as a bonus in the training.
All right.
In the
that
training.
Will help a lot because I have to have a conversation again soon. So that's really good.
So. Oh, good. Yes. Take a look at that. It'll be important for you. Okay. Awesome.
Wonderful. Great. So.
Anybody else? All right. Going once. Going twice, sold. Well, thank you, everybody. We will, Davey, I'll reach out to you shortly here. We'll schedule a one-on-one, and the rest of you, will look forward to seeing you next week.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
All right. Alrighty. Talk soon. Bye. All right. Mm-hmm.